this OD-60? Is it only found in the Gulfstream area?
I believe so, Mr. Tracy.
Oh, Lady Penelope could soon tell us.
Penny? How would she know?
Wasn't she on the panel to judge the All Pets Poodle competition?
Poodle competition?
All Pets, the only dog food that uses the food that nature provides from the sea. OD-60, of course.
Tintin, get on to Penny right away. I want to know each location of OD-60 and whether any has been found in or near the Mediterranean. And tell her to make it fast. I've got a hunch.
A hunch, Father?
Jeff Tracy turns to the navigational chart and again points to the spot marked by the large red cross. He then draws a line with his finger to show that it crosses the planned route of Ocean Pioneer 2.
Yes, Scott. A very strong hunch that somewhere just about here there's a great pile of OD-60. But it's more than a hunch that sailing out from here there's 200,000 tons of Elsterine in Ocean Pioneer 2.
Unaware of the awful danger that lies ahead of them, the crew of Ocean Pioneer 2 prepare to report their latest position to Port of London Pioneer Base.
75 miles from the coast, Captain.
Excellent, Jensen. Excellent.
This is Port of London, Pioneer Base to Pioneer 2. Come in, Ocean Pioneer 2.
This is Ocean Pioneer 2 to Pioneer Base. Our chart position is 350 by 210. Proceeding at 60 knots. Over.
Good progress, Pioneer 2. We'll have a reception committee with you.
Get rid of that noise, Jensen.
On Jeff Tracy's instructions, Lady Penelope has arranged a meeting with the managing director of All Pets, the manufacturers of the dog food that contains the substance OD-60.
Lady Penelope, how very delightful.
Sir Arthur, it's so good of you to see me at such short notice. It's this doggy book that I'm compiling, you know. Now, in the chapter on feeding, I feel that my readers will want to know more about OD-60.
Of course, I know we can rely on your discretion. We wouldn't like everyone to know where to troll for our product.
Oh, of course, Sir Arthur. You can rely on me entirely.
Thank you, Lady Penelope. Well, now, looking at this map, if we follow the Gulf Stream from its source here and around the coast of Florida, we find the main sources of OD-60.
The main sources, Sir Arthur? There are others, then.
Well, we don't know yet. Look at the map. Just look at the distance that we have to transport OD-60. I tell you, the capital costs are crippling to my company. Now, what we have done is to dump 150,000 tons of active OD-60 in the Mediterranean in the hope that it will flourish and provide further raw material for All Pets.
Then there is OD-60 in the Mediterranean?
No, we don't know for sure yet.
Oh, well, what a capital idea. I promise I won't tell any of the girls at the club. You can count on me, Sir Arthur.
After her meeting with Sir Arthur, Lady Penelope speeds back to London in her special turbocharged pink Rolls-Royce.
I trust the mission was successful, m'lady.
Yes, Parker. Sir Arthur confirmed all our worst suspicions. There really is OD-60 in the Mediterranean. I must radio Jeff at once to warn him. Ocean Pioneer 2 is heading straight for trouble.
At International Rescue Headquarters, Scott desperately tries to contact Ocean Pioneer 2.
Ocean Pioneer 2 from International Rescue. Ocean Pioneer from International Rescue. Yeah, it's spreading to the lower frequencies now. Well, it's no use, Father. We'll never get through.
All right, Scott. It was just a long shot.
Well, I guess it's no use waiting for them to send out a distress call, because they just aren't going to be able to make one.
Well, what are we standing around for, then? Come on, let's go.
Scott and Virgil blast off in Thunderbird 1 and Thunderbird 2 in a race against time as Ocean Pioneer 2 sails closer and closer to danger.
Pioneer 2 to Port of London Pioneer Base. Come in, Pioneer Base. It's no good, Captain. We're just not getting through.
Number two, trim your reactor definition. You're 2 points over.
Very good, sir. She won't respond to orders, sir.
Jensen, switch over to manual. I'll trim the reactor myself.
Very good, sir. Manual it is, sir.
Right, Jensen. Give me your readings as I trim.
We're starting to overcompensate, sir.
Start your readings, Jensen.
Reading 039, sir. Rising. 042, rising. 47, still rising, sir.
Speed rising to 80 knots, Captain.
2 to Port of London, Pioneer Base. This is an emergency.
It's no good, number two. The reactor's gone too far. Close down the radiation shields. Jensen, steer on radar course 370 by 298. Boy, what a maiden voyage this has turned out to be. Even the weather's deteriorating.
Ocean Pioneer 2 sails on blindly. A radiation shield thrown down, a radiation hazard siren sounding eerily through the swirling mist.
Steering on radar course 370 by 298, sir, at 85 knots.
85? The engines won't stand it. They won't stand it.
The tanker's nuclear reactor, now out of control, pushes the turbine engines beyond their limit. And with a sickening sound of tortured metal, they explode, cutting off power throughout the ship. On the bridge, locked behind the radiation shields, with the air fast running out and with only emergency power for light and for short-range radio communication, the captain orders a last desperate call to international rescue.
Jensen. Jensen.
Sir.
The radio, Jensen. Call international rescue. It's our last chance. We can't last long without air.
International rescue. Must call international rescue.
The captain and crew are unaware that their distress call has been anticipated and that a rescue attempt is already underway. Scott in Thunderbird 1 takes up position over the stricken tanker. He radios Virgil in Thunderbird 2.
Okay, Virgil, I found her. She's drifting off course toward the danger zone.
There's quite a lot of mist around, too, which is going to help matters.
Can hardly hear you, Scott. This interference is really getting worse.
I suggest we keep radio contact down to the minimum.
FAB, I'm going to try to land on the deck.
With visibility practically nil, Scott carefully flies through the mist. Thunderbird 1 hovers over the aft deck, near the bridge of the tanker, and lands. On the bridge, conditions have deteriorated badly. The breathable air is almost gone, and the heat is overpowering. Jensen, the radio operator, makes a last attempt to call international rescue.
Calling international rescue. Radiation shields in position. Air supply failed.
Scott, now wearing breathing apparatus and a special asbestos suit, makes his way on foot carefully towards the bridge. In an effort to contact the trapped men inside, Scott attaches a voice amplifier onto the bulkhead with a magnetic clamp.
This is International Rescue. This is International Rescue.
If you can hear me, speak in the direction of the lower port bulkhead.
But with their air almost all gone, the captain and his two crewmen have blacked out. They can neither help themselves nor hear Scott.
Gee, it's getting real thick. I hope Virgil's not far off.
The mist continues to thicken and swirl, making conditions for flying extremely dangerous.
Take a look at that. Terrifying, isn't it? We're never going to find a tanker in all this. See if we can get through to Scott and home on his signal.
Thunderbird 2 calling Ocean Pioneer. Come in, Scott.
Nothing.
But Both Virgil and John Tracy in Thunderbird 2 are painfully aware that they could easily get lost and miss making contact with Scott altogether.
Now, where the heck is Virgil? We can't afford to split up now. That's him. Calling Virgil in Thunderbird 2.
Calling Thunderbird 2.
There he is. Come in, Scott. Where are you? I can hear your motors. You're somewhere over to the starboard side. Now steer 5 degrees to port.
Virgil and John managed to catch sight of Ocean Pioneer 2 through a brief gap in the mist. The huge rescue craft hovers overhead, its engine screaming.
There she goes. Okay. Now let's hurry it up, fellas.
Got a moment to waste.
Okay, John. On your way.
Right, Virgil. Keep her steady.
The rescue is now fully underway. John, also wearing breathing apparatus and a special asbestos suit, is lowered from Thunderbird 2 onto the deck of the stricken ship.
Here goes.
As soon as John hits the deck, stand well clear till I send for you.
Scott, using a special handheld laser, begins to cut through the bulkhead steel door to the bridge. John soon joins him.
How's it coming, Scott?
I'm nearly there, John. Here it comes.
Scott successfully cuts through the steel door, and both he and John go inside to the control deck.
Say, they look in bad shape, Scott.
Yeah. Now, come on.
Just look.
The sea around Ocean Pioneer 2 begins to froth and foam as the cargo of liquid alsterine and the mass of OD-60 begin to interreact.
Well, this can only mean one thing. We must be right over the OD-60 now.
Virgil, you better come in and stand by. And step on it, or we might not be around when you get here.
I'm on my way. How's Scott getting on?
He's bringing around the crew.
Captain, can you hear me?
Call International Rescue. It's only hope.
Well, I sure hope you're right, Captain.
As Scott revives the three crewmen, John uses a two-way communicator to talk Virgil and Thunderbird 2 into position over the giant tanker.
Just want you to know.
Sorry, Captain. No time right now. Your ship is about to blow up.
It's what?
Virgil lowers the rescue cage, and the captain and crew hastily climb in. John is the next to leave. Scott calls Thunderbird 2 on the two-way communicator.
Okay, Virgil. Pull away. And you make it snappy.
FAB, Scott.
As the huge rescue craft roars away, explosions start to break out all over the giant tanker. On the aft deck, Scott, still shrouded in mist, begins his takeoff in Thunderbird 1. A moment later, a brilliant ball of flame engulfs the tanker in a huge and terrifying explosion.
No sign of them anywhere.
Aboard Thunderbird 2, both John and Virgil are worried that Scott might not have taken off in time.
Thunderbird 1 from Thunderbird 2. Come in, Scott. Interference is cleared, but Scott doesn't answer.
You just got to have made it.
Thunderbird 1, come in, please. Do you read me?
Loud and clear, Virgil.
Okay, let's get out of it. See you back at the base.
Scott is alive, the crew saved, and another international rescue mission successfully completed. Later, back at International Rescue Headquarters, John and Scott are taking a well-earned rest around the swimming pool. Their father, Jeff Tracy, sits nearby reading a book. The two young men have a difference of opinion.
I still say that 120,000 tons of ships stands for a heck of a lot of capital investment, Scott, and we should have tried towing her out.
Sure. Oh, sure, boy. But do you reckon we could have made it in time?
Who knows? That's all part of the game, isn't it?
Now, hold it, boys. John, how many rescues have you been out to?
I guess about a dozen, Father.
Scott?
All of them, Father.
Okay. Yet you still argue.
Oh, we weren't arguing, sir.
No, we were just discussing it, Father.
Listen. For many years now, man has worked to perfect the material things in this world. And he's done pretty well for himself. If a building falls down, he can soon build it up again. With life, it's different. And this is why the object of international rescue will never change. Your job is to save lives that are in danger. And that's how it's going to be. Always. Got it?
Well, that's okay by me, Father.
Yeah, you're sure, Father.
Okay. Go and dip your hot heads in the pool. I want to read my book.
This is the end of Danger at Ocean Deep. This has been a Canbar presentation of a Gerry Anderson production made for ITC Entertainment Limited. FAB...